John Pollock is an O. Henry World Pun-Off Champion and served as a speechwriter for President Bill Clinton. His previous books include Cork Boat and The World on a String, How to Become a Freelance Foreign Correspondent, a job that John mastered during 3 years working in Spain. Welcome, John.
Thank you.
Now, your new book, The Pun Also Rises, is subtitled How the Humble Pun Revolutionized Language, Changed History, and Made Wordplay More Than Some Antics, and has been described as a funny, erudite, and provocative exploration of puns, the people who make them, and this derided wordplay's remarkable impact on history. You take puns very seriously, don't you?
I have always loved puns since I could first put words together into sentences. In researching the book, I came to appreciate puns for the much more important role they've played in history and in language and in human creativity. So, yes, while a lot of people dismiss them as juvenile or silly, there's a lot more to puns than meet the ear.
Now, puns are commonly dismissed as one of the lowest forms of wit, and punsters often get groans, and some of them are well-deserved. But in your book, you say puns revolutionized language and played a pivotal role in making the modern world possible. Can you give us a bit of background on the history?
Sure. The earliest evidence we have of the human capacity for making puns dates back 35,000 years. And it comes in the form of carved stone statuettes about the size of an Oscar found in the caves of Europe that if you look at them from one side, it's a naked woman. And if you rotate it 180 degrees, you see an erect phallus. And what it shows is that people had the intellectual capacity at that time to see the relationship between two distinct but related ideas and see them as a unity. Their meaning depends on how you look at it. And so we know that they had the intellectual capacity for puns. Hmm. Now, over time, evidence shows that people of all major language groups have made puns and make puns today for widely different reasons. In ancient Babylon, for example, there were riddling duels between princes that often turned on clever puns, and these could escalate into armed conflict. Later on in the time of Shakespeare, puns were seen as a sign of culture, of refinement, of high wit and intellect. And it's only in recent centuries that the pun got kicked to the curb of humor, because really puns are about multiplicity of meaning, not necessarily humor.
What are a couple of examples of puns in other cultures? And if the puns themselves don't translate well, it's probably understandable.
Let's start with something simple. There are such things as bilingual puns that work in two languages. So let's take an example. Knock, knock.
Who's there?
Kelly.
Kelly who?
Kelly importa, which if you speak Spanish means, what's it to you? And so it's a pun that if you speak two languages does translate across lines. But cultures of wide diversity use puns and use them for different reasons. In China, for example, bloggers today use puns to elude censorship because the government puts such strictures on what people can say and what they can talk about that punsters often undertake political commentary through puns for which they can't be punished because those words are not prohibited. It's only that they sound like words that are prohibited. And obviously one would need to speak Mandarin to get those puns, but there's a YouTube phenomenon of the Ballad of the Straw Mud Horse, or the Grass Mud Horse, depending on the translation, in which the bloggers and videographers have made humorous commentaries on government censorship using a whole series of puns, and there are subtitles on these that are worth checking out. Another example would be the punning duels of the Chiapas Highlands in southern Mexico by the speakers of Tzotzil, which is a Mayan language, and they have long pun duels that can last for hundreds of exchanges. And while the puns themselves are perhaps difficult to pronounce or understand if you don't speak Tzotzil, it's a way that they use to talk about taboo subjects with some impunity, perhaps exploring the possibility of dating your pun opponent's sister, and you could broach sensitive topics through punning. So people pun for a lot of different reasons in a lot of different languages, and it's something very intrinsic to human language.
Very interesting. And in your answer there, I heard you say the word punished and impunity, and I wonder if the word pun is related to those in some way.
It's actually not related, but the origin of the word is itself lost in the mists of history, although there is some indication that it may derive from Sanskrit, and the word pundit is means a person who unpacks ambiguity, and puns are built on ambiguity, although the scholarship is divided on whether the root is the same. There's a lot of research that's going on now, and so the state of the science is always changing. But what the functional MRI imaging has shown is that punning is puts extremely complex demands on the brain, because basically it has to take incoming sound waves and decipher the meaning of the speaker. And if two words sound exactly alike, for example, bears go barefoot, one needs to be able to distinguish bear, B-E-A-R, the animal, from bear, B-A-R-E, the lack of shoes, as in bears go barefoot. And how the brain untangles that and does it so quickly is really amazing. And it forces the brain to use all sorts of different systems to check and recheck and make educated guesses about intent, and then double back if there's been a mistake, and all do it in a blink of the eye. And the book talks about this and explains in part how the brain does it.
Now, your book is certainly entertaining and truly educational, as I think you're demonstrating here in this conversation. And you're really answering some fundamental questions. So let's take a couple of them up briefly. What is a pun exactly, and why do people make them?
There are many different kinds of puns, from spoonerisms to Tom Swifties, to double entendres, but the most common type of pun is the use of a word in such a way that because of its sound, it can be interpreted in more than one way. So that example, bears go barefoot, would be a pun on bear and bear. They sound exactly the same way, and you have to untangle which is which. And a lot of that depends on context. So that's the most common type of pun. As I mentioned, there are others, such as a spoonerism, I'd rather have a bottle in front of me than a frontal lobotomy.
Mm-hmm.
And there you're swapping out parts of words for humorous effect. Or you could say, I'd rather, let's come up with an example of a Swiftie. I need another load of mulch, the gardener repeated. So they can take all different forms. And that's the great thing about puns, is that they don't like being contained. They jump the fences that people try to erect around them, and that's why they can be so instructive in the complexity of language and imagination.
This sounds like, you know, the pun is one of the most important aspects of civilization.
Yes, that's true. And what in my research, I went and interviewed the top Egyptologist at the British Museum, and based on some reading I had been doing, he said, "Oh, of course, the ancient Egyptians were big punsters, and the pyramid texts are full of puns." And what emerges from this is the key role that puns played in the invention of the phonetic alphabet. So I think everyone would agree that the alphabet was one of the key intellectual breakthroughs in the history of humanity, because for the first time, about 1700 BC, people had the capacity to write down ideas of infinite complexity and length relatively easily and transmit those ideas not just over distance but over time. And once you can record detailed information and transmit it over time, people can accumulate knowledge. And that's when civilization really started to take off, was with the invention of practical writing, because it really facilitated trade, medicine, science, discovery, and progress. Now, the question is, how do you get from pictures on a cave wall of 12 buffalo with arrows in the side of 9 of them, the first annual report, to a description of a contract, for example, setting the terms of a complex business deal and interest payments, etc.? Well, you can't do that with pictograms. You need phonetic letters to get the granularity, the specificity of the ideas that are spelled out with letters. So the question is, how do you go from pictograms to phonetic alphabet? And the way they did that was that the scribes in Egypt and in Mesopotamia realized that they could break apart sound, symbol, and meaning and recombine them. So they started taking pictures, pictograms, and using them not for their symbolic value, but for their phonetic value, or for the phonetic value of a certain syllable within that, and recombining them. So let's take another knock-knock joke, for example. Knock-knock.
Who's there?
Isabel.
Isabel who?
Isabel necessary on a bicycle. Now, we laugh, or don't laugh, but what we just did was harvest the syllables in the name Isabel and repurpose those sounds into is a bell, necessary on a bicycle. And that's essentially what the scribes were doing, taking hieroglyphs and pictograms and cuneiform and repurposing the phonetic values in increasingly abstract and complex ways, deliberately punning their way to an alphabet.
Interesting. And so, you know, it's really kind of about jumping over the fences and having an agility of mind that transcends whatever previous understandings there might have been to see things in a different context.
Yes, and this is the essence of human progress. Think about what it takes to go from the days of the caveman to the space shuttle. Somebody had to realize that, oh, if I bang two rocks together, I get a spark. If I get a spark, I can put some little grass there, and it'll light a fire, and then add some bigger wood, and then get a real fire, and then boil water, and then generate steam, and then generate electricity, and suddenly you've got modern civilization. But it's through the association of two disparate ideas over and over and over again, people making connections between things that don't seem connected, and suddenly seeing, there is a relationship here, there is a connection, there one plus one equals X, And that is the essence of punning, where you're creating an association between two ideas and coming up with a new idea. Are there bad puns? All the time. Are there scientific theories that come to nothing? All the time. Are there meals that you go to in a restaurant that turn out to be not so good? All the time. But that's the essence of the human experience, trial and error. And that's what punning is trial and error, and sometimes brilliance emerges. And that's why when people denigrate punning, they're really denigrating the whole creative process that has driven human progress.
Thank you so much, John Pollack, author of The Pun Also Rises, available as an audiobook narrated by Pete Larkin on Tantor.com. Thanks, John.
Thanks for putting out the audiobook so quickly. I am curious to hear how the actor that you hired did. I read my last book, Cork Boat, in a studio, and there was also in an abridged version, and then there was an unabridged by another actor. And it's always interesting to hear people's different takes on things.
Especially with puns, right?
Yeah, a lot of them verbal, and this book is probably challenging in some respects, because if you're just hearing them, you might miss them. And in fact, it'll be interesting to see what the actor caught and didn't, because some of them are quite subtle.